This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. So you've been telling the story about this Lake Stevens dad who had to hold off the intruder in the garage?
Yeah.
This is a crazy story.
Finding all these weapons kind of stashed in different parts of the garage?
In case you're just tuning in and haven't heard the newscast, so a Lake Stevens father says he had to fight off an armed intruder that he and his son found hiding in their garage on Friday. He says that the man may have been looking to ambush the family members there. It's just an absolutely crazy story. The intruder had pulled together a bunch of slabs of wood trying to build a barricade. But when the dad, the son, and the son's friend walked inside the garage, the intruder attacked him, or attacked them. The dad is Shane McDaniel. He talked to our news partners at Cairo 7. He can't believe this guy was a squatter who had essentially just moved into their garage.
It's really a bizarre scene. And the scary thing is that somebody could be that comfortable and set up an ambush point in your own garage.
And he says that this intruder was ready to fight.
He's hiding behind the door here, and he had another knife over here. He tosses the knife down with this one, and he continues to reach, so I fired off the warning shot off to the side. Then he starts to go down, and then he just goes into full combat fight. He's going to fight all of us.
So the dad had a gun that he legally has to protect himself, his family. And so, as you heard, he fired a warning shot, but the guy went into a combat stance. And here's some of the weapons that this intruder, this squatter, had.
He had a machete here that he brought with him. He's got a knife here. He had a claw hammer ready at the go.
And he is confident that this squatter was ready to kill.
There's no way you'd have knives stationed all the way around, machetes, hammers, axes, all in one spot here. He has made an ambush trap.
And, oh, by the way, guess what else was in the garage?
So he's probably sitting in here paranoid out of his mind thinking, what if they come up here? And so he's got these weapons and he's ready for combat.
Yeah, he also had a syringe. So it was a drug vagrant, most likely. And at a time when there's a mania in Olympia and with the AG to regulate guns to an unprecedented extent in our state, this father believes that having a gun absolutely saved his and his family's lives.
Oh, I think definitely. He's got this place laden with weapons, so I think that that would have been a good way to get stabbed.
Man, thank goodness he had a gun.
And someone had reported that there's someone suspicious, because they had no idea that this person was squatting.
Yeah. Who doesn't use their garage at all?
Well, they used it for, they refurbish electric wheelchairs for people for charity. So that's what it's used for. So they just had a bunch of them stored in there that they work on occasionally.
Man, oh man. It is getting wild, wild west-ish all around our Puget Sound region here. And beyond, up north in Bellingham. This is the story that caught your eye over the weekend, Ursula, when you emailed this to me.
I just couldn't believe it.
Did you? I didn't have time Saturday to watch 48 Hours.
No, I was working the Blanchette auction, so I didn't get a chance to, but I saw excerpts and I've read the stories.
Yes, as have I. So a academic advisor at Western Washington University is, according to CBS 48 Hours, is the prime suspect in a 1988 murder case. And so Cairo 7, our news partners, they were with Kathy Patrick. Now, what 48 Hours is reporting is that Kathy Patrick, and again, she's an academic advisor, Western Washington U, they believe that she murdered Carolyn Abel back in 1988 and is still working at Western. So here's a little.
This happened in South Korea. So the murder happened in South Korea.
Yeah, and so that's
a big
weird part
of the case.
Story.
So they were teaching English in South Korea.
And at the time, we didn't have an extradition treaty with South Korea, so she couldn't be extradited for the murder. And there was this weird thing that if two Americans, you know, murder and suspect overseas, you had to extradite them back here.
Right.
South Korea wasn't going to try
and
her.
And now South Korea has a statute of limitations of 15 years. So the family's feeling like there's never going to be justice. And they're alleging that this woman who now works at Western is getting away with murder.
Yeah, a state government employee at Western Washington University. So Cairo 7, along with CBS, they had some of the details on this, and it is just crazy.
Investigators from two countries that have now are certain that you murdered Carolyn Abel. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say?
I have to say that I'm innocent.
This is Catherine Patrick.
Well, that sounded compelling. That was about the weakest declaration of innocence that I've ever heard. I'd have to say, of course, that's what you'd have to say. Are you, though?
I have to say that I'm innocent.
This is Catherine Patrick, a program coordinator at Western Washington University who does academic advising. CBS News reports she's the prime suspect in a 1988 murder, allegations that have students on campus talking.
I was kind of confused and a little scared for my safety.
It's pretty scary just because I guess you don't know who else is involved in questionable things.
Melanie said the university hasn't notified students about the accusations.
No.
That CBS News' 48 Hours digs into, reporting Patrick and the victim, Carolyn Abel, were both teaching English in South Korea in 1988.
Let me pause this. Would you be livid if you were a parent, you're paying tuition for your kid at Western, your kid is going to this woman as an academic advisor sitting alone in an office, and Western doesn't let anybody know?
My sisters, so my nephew, I just spoke about this with my sister. Her son is going to Western, and she is livid.
Yeah.
It's not his advisor, but just the idea that someone, now other people could argue, well, she's never been convicted. It's never been proven. It's an allegation.
But as they said, they have investigators in, you know, both continents who are certain that she's the killer. And that's what 48 Hours was reporting.
When Abel was stabbed to death,
they believe that Kathy Patrick murdered Carolyn Abel. But there's really nothing at this point that can be done.
48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sant, who has been investigating the case for 3 years, told Cairo 7 anchor John Nicely that Patrick was back in the U.S. by the time Korean police issued this warrant for her arrest.
In 1989, there was no extradition treaty between South Korea and the United States.
Van Sant said he went to Western Washington University back in January to talk to Patrick.
There were 30 stab wounds on Carolyn's body, and friends say that you attacked her after she rejected you, your romantic advances.
No, this has to stop now, please.
Wow. It is just absolutely a bizarre story.
You know, Western has issued a statement. Basically, they're saying that she has not been a problem in the 18 years of service there.
Yeah, their statement was infuriating. Let me just read it verbatim. Kathy Patrick is a program coordinator at Western Washington University and has worked at Western since 2000. During her 18 years of service at Western, the university has had no concerns. The university asks that her privacy as a Western employee be respected. An assessment by university officials shows no evidence of a current threat to Western students, faculty, or staff. We'll continue to monitor the situation. So she's allegedly plunged a knife 30 times into a woman who spurned her as a lover, they allege. And they say, but she hasn't killed anybody the 18 years. She's been at Western, so we don't see any problem here. I do. We're talking about a government employee. And by the way, when Western says, we ask that you respect her privacy, she is sitting on our dime, on our property, every single day as an employee of the state of Washington. So don't you tell 48 Hours or Cairo 7 or anyone else that they got to back off. She's a public employee, and we're supposed to be watchdogs of government. And so it's what a horrible story. Speaking of horrible stories, last week the law firm that is suing Boeing over the Indonesian 737 MAX crash it was off of Indonesia.
Java Sea.
Last October. They broke the news of their lawsuit on our radio show. And I learned a lot about that crash and the system failure on that plane as I was researching that story. And so now when I heard about this latest Boeing crash this weekend, and once again, it's a 737 MAX, an Ethiopian Airlines, 157 passengers aboard. And I'm guessing, like everybody, I can't help but think that that would be about the greatest terror a human being could face. In the Indonesian crash, it was 45 seconds from the time the plane had started to, you know, get to where the pilots had completely lost control until it crashed into the sea. Mm-hmm. For 45 seconds, you are strapped into your seat. Maybe you're flying for business. Maybe your loved ones are far, far away. And you have that realization that this is it. And you think about the sheer human terror of a plane crash, and now the same plane for Boeing. And Boeing's, and this is the least of it, the financial aspect, but it's a relevant local news story because a lot of you are invested in Boeing stock. Boeing stock was down 22 points today to 400, which is about a 5.33% drop today just with that news. But Boeing was really pitching these planes, the 737 MAX, as ones that would save fuel, that would save the airlines millions. And now we've had two airliners that have crashed, both the 737 MAX. And this is a horrible problem for Boeing. It's also just pure human tragedy for all the families and loved ones on the plane and left behind.
More than 20 of the victims worked for the United Nations. So they were...
Eight Americans on this plane that crashed yesterday. But it's the same plane. Now, two crashes in the news. The Indonesian crash was last October. But, I mean, we're talking... And this comes after... 2017 was, I believe, the first year ever where there was not a commercial airline fatality in the world. And then in 2018, and now the first 3 months of 2019, the same type of Boeing plane has gone down.
And what happened was very similar in both, and it was shortly after takeoff and then having this vertical, as described in the lawsuit and eyewitnesses of the Lion Air crash. I mean, it was basically the pilots struggling to try to keep the plane going up.
Yeah, there was an automatic system. There was a sensor that gave a faulty reading, and it told the airplane to nose up, and the pilots were fighting to pull the nose back down, and the automatic system was trying to pull it up. And the pilots, according to the lawsuit in the Indonesia crash, they hadn't been told that this system had been installed on these Boeing planes, and so they didn't know. All we have to do is kill this automatic system, and then we can just fly the planes manually.
But since then, the information has been sent out,
yes,
and pilots have been warned, and they're supposed to be training.
And they found the black box, so we don't know what the cause of this one was yet. I was talking to my son-in-law about all this yesterday because he's a pilot. And he just passed his latest level of training, and he's flying Beavers now, which is he's getting into bigger and bigger planes. And he was describing for me these systems and the pilots' union anger at Boeing. But I'll tell you something else. Airbus is going to make hay off of this, because Boeing said, you buy this plane, you'll save millions in fuel over the similarly configured Airbus. And this is a long-term problem now for Boeing when two of the same model goes down. Next up in the Fastest 15, Tucker Carlson, who's one of the Fox News stars. He is being criticized for a 15 to 12-year-old interview that he did on Sirius XM with Bubba the Love Sponge. And Tucker Carlson, one of the things he did was he used the C word.
Alexa Stewart, we run into her all the time.
She seems like a... She seems awful.
Yeah, she is
awful. They're very...
She seems extremely...
That word out of... Oh, yeah, I stepped over him. She seems... What? Now, go ahead.
She just does seem a little... Yeah. And you said it. I'm just agreeing with you. I don't use that word.
Right. I'd love for Tucker Carlson tonight on MSNBC.
Okay. He also had some other comments about women.
Well, I love women, but they're extremely primitive. They're basic. They're not that hard to understand.
I feel sorry for unattractive women. I mean, there's nothing they did, you know?
What's better than hockey, weed, and I mean...
But you know, first of all, there's no Canadian woman that you'd want to pay to sleep with. Well, anybody who answers my trophy wife is my favorite possession is my hero. I don't give a I'm voting for the guy.
Okay. So now CNN, I saw they had panels this weekend talking about Tucker Carlson, how horrible this is. Of course, CNN did not talk about the fact that the Covington Catholic kids over the weekend are suing CNN for $250 million. Instead, they are hoping that the Tucker Carlson thing will lead to some backlash against Fox. And Tucker Carlson's response was, I'm on TV for an hour every night. They can pull up these tapes are anywhere from 13 up to 13 years old. And he said, look, you want to know what I think? You can watch me for an hour on TV every night. He did not apologize, which I think is very smart. These guys who are, you know, they're trying to pull up old tapes on everybody. Politicians are doing it. Media outlets are doing it. And apologizing is the worst thing you can do unless you truly did something that needs apologizing. But words like that on a shock jock radio show, he was playing to his house. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up next, we're going to talk to a husband and father up in Monroe whose Facebook post was deemed offensive by Facebook. Wait until you hear what sort of thing Facebook calls offensive. Coming up next. Many years ago in the United States, when the Democratic Party still had some measure of sanity, you had party leaders like Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton. They all said that, yes, they were pro-choice, but they believed that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. And in the last few months, the Democrat Party has taken the most bizarre turn imaginable as they now are shining lights in the sky and on the bridges in New York City when New York passed a radical late-term abortion bill. In Virginia, the governor said their new bill will allow babies to die even if they are born alive. And it's just a shocking turn for this. But I'm sure that both sides get equal weight in the social media world, right? The story would suggest that that's a big no. Scott and Jenna Beyer, they live out in Monroe, and Scott Beyer joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Scott, good to talk with you this afternoon.
Good to talk with you. Thanks for having us on.
Tell me about your family, Scott. How many kids do you and Jenna have?
We have six kids, and five of them came home through adoption, and our youngest, Eve, is 1 year old, which is a pretty big deal considering how small she was born. She was born at 23 weeks and 1 pound, 1 ounce, so roughly 4 months early.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, it's just a beautiful, diverse family. You adopted these kids from all over, I assume?
All over the U.S., all of our adoptions have been domestic.
Okay, got it. So tell me about Eve and how she came to be born at just 23 weeks.
So birth mother had a unexpected early delivery, and so Eve was born at 23 weeks, 1 pound, 1 ounce. And a lot of people don't realize that though that is a very difficult medical circumstance, many kids can survive being born that small. And so my wife and I found out about her. We flew to Arizona where she was and were there 2 days after she was born. So from that day forward, my wife in particular was there multiple times a week, flying in and there with her as she was slowly but surely getting better, learning to breathe on her own, gaining weight. We measured it by grams to start with, every gram was a big deal. And then after 100 days in the hospital, she came home. And since then, she's been doing better and better all the time. She's really, you wouldn't know at this point, just meeting her, that she had any sort of medical challenges.
And tell me why you and Jenna have decided to make adoption such an important part of building your family.
Well, we're both people of faith. God has done an awful lot for us. And, you know, based off of our beliefs of the Bible, we believe that every child matters. And we have been connected with other people who have adopted. There's an organization called Sacred Selections that helps raise money for adoptions. And once we kind of found out that there were kids in need, and that's a way we could grow our family, we just really never looked back. And so one adoption turned into another, And so we're a very happy, chaotic family of eight.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So one biological child, five adopted children. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So, Eve, as you mentioned, there are certainly medical complications that come with being born at 23 weeks. But how she and your family have persevered. You wanted to do something to memorialize her on Facebook, or to pay tribute to her on Facebook on her first birthday, right?
Right. So what happened was she turned one, which is a particularly big deal. And throughout her whole journey, people were helping us in so many ways. There were so many people praying for her. There were so many people. There were people buying plane tickets for my wife to fly back and forth to Arizona to be there with her. I mean, people making meals for our family. Just so many people actively involved in her life. And so I did one of those kind of then and now pictures. So one picture was of her at one and at her first birthday, and then another picture of when she was still in the hospital. I purposely didn't go with anything that would have been particularly difficult for anybody to look at. It is a picture of her when she's small. There's my wife's hands are in there, and then mine. So it kind of gives you some view of how small she was at that point. When she was first born, my wedding ring could fit all the way up to her arm, all the way up to her armpit. And so I just posted that photo and mentioned a few things about it being her birthday. And then the organization that had paid for the adoption cost, Sacred Selections, they posted it to their Facebook page just to let all the people know with their organization, hey, look at how well this little girl is doing that you all supported bringing home.
Sure.
And that's when things kind of got weird.
Well, yeah, it got weird. But first, it just took off like wildfire, to the extent that it was a recommended post that should be boosted because it had attracted such widespread interest, right?
Right, yeah. So, pictures of little kids get a lot of attention, and a lot of people were really excited she was doing so well. So Facebook recommended that it be boosted, where you can essentially spread the audience a little wider.
Okay, so tell me about the weirdness.
To do that.
Tell me about the weirdness after that.
Yeah. So the organization decided to boost those photos of Eve to get some more exposure for their organization, and it came back denied. Facebook had recommended they boost it, and then they said, no, we won't. And the reason that they gave was, I've got it in front of me so I can read it exactly. This type of material creates an unexpected experience for users and goes against our core value of fostering a positive global community. And we requested a manual review of that to make sure that a person and not a computer was reviewing it.
Right.
And the end result is they just denied it five different times because her picture in the hospital went against their core values of fostering a positive global community.
It's unbelievable. And then you sent me all these screenshots. Another one, it said, this isn't running because it uses an image or video that contains shocking, sensational, or excessively violent content. Did it fall under shocking, sensational, or excessively violent?
I am not sure. I mean, it's a picture of a kid. I mean, I see pictures on Facebook of kids who are going through chemotherapy and things like that, and as advertisements. I mean, organizations that are hospitals that are children's hospitals advertising wanting people to donate. And I don't have any problem with that. I think they should be able to highlight the good that they're doing to save kids' lives.
Yeah.
So the only thing that I can tell that seems to be different is that this goes against the pro-choice agenda.
Well, I don't know how else to interpret it. But you said in your email to me, you said, it seems wrong on so many levels. If society cannot celebrate life, but it can celebrate abortion, as they did recently in New York City, what will become of us? And I think that that's a very fair question. You didn't put it out there specifically to counteract the pro-choice crowd. You were celebrating Eve's life above all else.
Well, and that's exactly it. Yeah, and I'm not a particularly political person by nature. This was in no way political. It was just simply pro-adoption, if anything, and happy birthday to my daughter. And we wanted to inform so many people who had been helping through praying and finances and just general support to let them know how well she was doing. It's just a picture of a kid at her first birthday and at her birth.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, it just shows that there is a inherent bias in these biggest social media platforms. Google clearly has a bias. They acknowledge that. Facebook does. And it's becoming really scary. As newspapers have abandoned fair-minded journalism and the social media world takes over, and when it is populated by these algorithms that will only drive one side of the spectrum, these are scary times that we're approaching here.
That's what really hit my wife and I was, I get if you don't want people coming out against something all the time, but if I can't even show a picture of my kid who was born, and we can't celebrate that, and we can't be happy about that. It's just what are we coming to?
Yeah.
Because it's entirely positive, and there wasn't anything said about pro-life or pro-choice. It was just, hey, here's Eve. She entered the world at 1 pound, 1 ounce, and
she made
and,
it.
And thanks for all the prayers.
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. Well, I'm glad you shared the story. It's important that we remind people of the battles we're facing in our everyday world, because I think there's a lot of evil out there that we're fighting.
There is, and I thank you for taking the time to highlight the story. We appreciate what you're doing on your show all the time.
Thank you, Scott, and all my best to your wife, Jeannie, and to all of your kids. God bless your family.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
All right. Take care. Scott and Jenna Beyer out in Monroe. Facebook wouldn't let them celebrate their child's birthday because there was a picture of a preemie. But we can celebrate abortion all we want in our society. We can shine lights into the sky to celebrate that. Love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead on The Dory Monson Show. We'll be right back. I was there. 2008, St. Paul, Minnesota, the Republican National Convention, when the strains of heart were echoing through the arena as John McCain's new running mate, Sarah the Barracuda Palin, was introduced to the crowd. And right away, Hart said, "We don't want to be associated with Sarah Palin." And so I'm talking about that on the air, and we get a phone call from a guy who's listening, and he says, "You know that guitar lick in Barracuda? That's me." It was Roger Fisher, who's the lead guitarist for Hart back in their early days. And I said, "How do I know you're Roger Fisher? Do you have a guitar handy?" And he picked it up and he started playing that riff right there for me of Barracuda here. So that was Sarah Palin. She didn't want Hart didn't want anything to do with Sarah Palin. And then you got John McCain had this as a campaign song.
If you change your mind,
take a chance
on the first in line.
Take a chance, take a chance,
honey,
take a chance,
take a chance, take a chance, take a chance on me.
And ABBA came out and said, "We don't want to be associated with any Republican. Stop using our music, John McCain." And then 2 years ago, Trump wanted to be your president.
Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
And Pharrell Williams said, "Stop it. I don't want to be associated with a Republican." Well, now for the first time, a Democrat is getting rejected by a singer. Elizabeth Warren has been using the Dolly Parton hit 9 to 5. And Dolly Parton said, "I don't want to be associated with Elizabeth Warren. Cease and desist." Finally, a Democrat gets rejected. I love Dolly. And the Big Leader 2 is next.